the fabulous strains of the Tom Tom Club circa 1983. And the song is The Wordy Rapping Hood, and the theme song for this new show on RPPFM. The voice of the peninsula, Tracy Hutchison, is my name, and welcome to edition number 2 of The Wordy Rapping Hood, the aforementioned song. The show that focuses on the life and times of all the fabulous people who call the Mornington Peninsula home, this part of Victoria that we love so much. And today's guest is someone who is helping, I guess, shape the taste of the peninsula in many ways, in quite literal ways. Kate McIntyre is the marketing manager. Kate McIntyre, MW, I should say, Master of Wine, marketing manager at the Moriduck Estate, the family wine business, the winery, and she's our guest on this 22nd of April. Kate, great to see you, and thanks for being part of the Wordy Rapping Hood.
Thank you for having me, Tracy. It's lovely to be here.
Firstly to you, and it's the question that I pose straight up to the guests of the Wordy Rapping Hood, is what brought you to the Mornington Peninsula?
I've been coming home to the Mornington Peninsula almost all my life. My family lived in England until I was 8 years old. So we went there when I was 4, came back when I was 8. And my father had been, he was a surgeon. He was finishing his training over there, but he loved and still does love wine, and had this crazy idea that he wanted to plant some vines and have a little hobby vineyard and make some wine on the side. And he hoped that that would be something he could retire early to, rather than becoming a doddery old surgeon who didn't know when to stop cutting. So we came back to Australia in 1980. And when he'd gone away, he thought he was going to have to try and convince my mother to move north, because in the early 70s when they left, there was really no wine industry in the southern part of Victoria or anywhere around Melbourne. And Melbourne was very much their home that they came back to. And he met a few other doctors who had started up things in the Yarra Valley. And he was looking at the Yarra Valley for quite a while. And then he met a few people, including a man called Gary Crittenden, who had done a lot of research down on the peninsula. He was a nurseryman. He knew how things grew down here. And he said, you've got to get into this new wine region. There's hardly anybody planting grapes yet, and it's a really good opportunity to do it. And so Dad and Gary came down to the peninsula and looked around for different sites, and they found the original site for Dramana Estate, which is now Crittenden Estate, and the site for Moriduck Estate at the same time, and they both fell in love with the two sites. And Dad stood in this big empty 20-acre paddock that had nothing except for a dead tree in it.
And a great view,
and decided, yep, this was, you know, north-facing slope, good soil, not too good because vines don't like good soil, really, so very sandy soil. And he said, this is where I'm going to plant my vines.
So you're talking about your dad, Richard.
Yeah.
And Gary Crittenden is also on my list of people that I hope will join us on the Wordy Rapping Hood. He's a great supporter of RPPFM, and I guess along with your dad has been the backbone of the wine industry in the Mornington Peninsula.
Yeah, the absolute pioneers.
On the pen. Well, the Moriduck Estate is still a winery that you find by going down a gravel track in between, sort of on the road between Moriduck and Tuorong, and then just produces this incredible view and the beautiful, quite romantic setting and vista that you get over the beautiful vines that you've got planted there amongst all the beautiful flowering plants and things that you've got going at the moment as well. You talked a little bit about the soil that has brought so many vineyards and winemakers to the Mornington Peninsula, and there's been a lot of association and talk about, oh, it's just like the regions in France and those sorts of things. Is that just the pen talking itself up, or is it actually quite a realistic thing to compare it with?
It's an ongoing research that we're actually doing as a wine industry down here on the Mornington Peninsula, because soil is a very important thing. It's not just the thing that the vines need to hang on to stop blowing away in the wind, but the soil really defines a lot about how the vines grow, how deep their root systems go, what sort of minerals are accessible to the vines and what sort of flavours you get, as well as water, which is the most important thing. So we have, a lot of people talk about Pinot Noir and limestone, and of course Burgundy has a lot of limestone and Champagne has a lot of limestone, and we don't have a lot of limestone here on the peninsula. So we sort of thought, well, is this going to be a problem for us? And so let's have a look at the soil that we've got and see what it does and see how it stands up to soil in other wine regions around the world. And we don't have limestone, but in the northern part of the peninsula we have very sandy alluvial soil, and it's sort of, you know, ancient seabeds. Our site at Muradach is special because a lot of the clay, the subsoil clay in the Mornington Peninsula is quite vine root unfriendly. So that means that a lot of vineyards are relatively shallow rooted, which is a good thing and a bad thing. It means that you can control the strength and the speed of the vine's growth and development over the season by giving it more or less water, but it means that you have to, in dry seasons, put water on the vineyard. At Muradach, we have such sandy clay. The vines have put their roots deep, deep down, and we thought that we would have a very low vigour vineyard because of this vine root unfriendly clay, but our vines are incredibly vigorous because they found groundwater. Mm. So it's a saving for us as far as not having to ever irrigate the vineyard after the vines are 2 years old. It means that we get what we get. We can't control vigour by withholding water because the vines have got access themselves.
Kate McIntyre is our guest on RPP. The wordy rapping hood is the show. Kate McIntyre, MW, which means Master of Wine, which you became the third, only the third woman in Australia to get your MW when you were allowed to put those letters after your name in 2010, and it's quite an achievement. I think it took you 6 or 7 years of
more like 10 or 11 years.
A long time. I'm going to get to the MW in a moment, but yep. You talked about Gary Crittenden from Crittenden Estate and your dad Richard McIntyre at Muradach Estate being, you know, two of the real pioneers of the wine industry here on the peninsula. For you though, when did you first get a kind of a visceral sense of being in a vineyard and I guess picking grapes?
Well, the first grapes that I picked were actually in the Yarra Valley when I was 9 years old, and this was when my father was doing his research, and he'd met John Middleton, who owned Mount Mary Estate, quite a famous vineyard for their Cabernet, and we went along, and it was back in those days. There was a real, you know, the wine industry is still very male dominated, and back then even more so. And so the Mount Mary would have a friends and family pick. Everyone would come along, and after the grapes had been picked, all the men would go over to the shed and taste last year's wine from barrels, and the women would help put the lunch out and get all of that organised. And I kind of was a bit bored by the putting the lunch out thing, and I sauntered over as a 9-year-old to my dad, who was tasting wine with other people. And I wrote my first tasting note that day. And
at nine?
Yeah, well, spoke my first tasting note. Dad gave me the wine to taste and
did you and swallow?
I swirled the glass as I'd seen the men doing, and sort of smelt it and tasted it and said, not bad for homemade, which John was pretty horrified at that. But, you know, I thought, yeah, that was quite a good first tasting note.
Oh, yeah. Off to a good start at nine.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was the Yarra Valley.
Yeah.
And around about the same time, your dad is scoping out the beautiful location that is still Muradach Estate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the vines would have gone in around about, so we're talking mid-80s?
Well, Dad and Mum bought the property in 1982, and we planted our first vines in 1983. And when I say we planted our first vines, we actually, as a family, physically went. Dad went and took the cuttings from other vineyards, and we all were involved in the planting. So lots of child labour. I have three siblings, and we all helped on the weekends
with the establishment.
Absolutely.
Paid in wine.
Well, when you're 9 and 10, you don't really think that's such a cool thing. But, you know, over the years, Mum and Dad put a tennis court in at Muriduck to try and, you know, bribe us to come down a little more. And we had, my sister and I had ponies for a while, which was really lovely. And but it was always, you know, pocket money was earned by working on the vineyard, helping with the pruning, all of that kind of thing. And for a little while, we sort of resented it. And I think that it's telling that I'm the only one of four who's come back to the family business. My sisters and my brother have gone and done other things, which is wonderful. They all enjoy drinking the wine, as do I. But I for a long time tried to sort of, well, didn't try. I thought wine is a nice thing to have in the background. It's a nice thing that Dad's doing. My great passion was languages and theatre, and I thought I was going to be a playwright, a theatre director, and probably, you know, producing French theatre, you know, for all of the millions of people who wanted to come and see absurdist French theatre productions in Melbourne. So that was my plan.
So instead you've chosen the theatre of wine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that all of that training that I did has really helped me with my ability to communicate both verbally and on paper about wine. It's a great passion I have, communicating something that might be a little foreign to people. I have a lot of friends who enjoy drinking wine. They say, but Kate, it just tastes like wine. You know, what is all this sort of wine commentary writing about wine? How do you find so many words to describe wine and to talk about wine? And I think that that's something that has, from my early days in the wine industry, and I started out in the wine industry with a job in a wine shop, which happened to be probably Melbourne's best wine shop at the time, which I didn't know when I applied for the job. I planned to possibly work there for 6 months, but I told the bosses there, who one of whom is also now a Mornington Peninsula resident, Philip Murphy, who...
Which was the wine shop?
Philip Murphy Wine and Spirits in Toorak. Mm-hmm. So Philip being Dan's son, and Philip has a winery down here as well now. So, you know, it's a small world. But I said, oh, yes, no, I really want to learn more about wine. And I thought, well, we'll see how this goes, but probably I'll, you know, earn some money and then go travelling and come back and get back into the theatre business. And I just got stuck because it was so wonderful. I was surrounded by really, it was a great time in that wine store and in the Melbourne wine scene. That it was 96 that I started there and worked there for 5 years. And the people who worked at that shop are now sort of leaders in the wine industry all through Victoria. We've got quite an amazing group of people who went through that store. And one of the wonderful things about it was that we were able to learn about wine together, teach each other about wine. And it was, even though it was part of a small chain, we were allowed to make all the decisions about what wine we stocked in the store and how we sold it. As long as we made budget and as long as we were selling good wine, then the bosses, the people who owned the place were really happy for us to have our autonomy. And that's a very rare thing these days in retail. And it was a really fun time to be in retail. So got to go to a lot of tastings, got to really start sort of translating my love of teaching and communication from taking it away from theatre and languages and talking about the language of wine, which has been something that's fascinated me and beguiled me and drawn me on ever since. It's tasting wine is wonderful, but you know, tasting it with people who get the same reaction about how exciting these flavors are or that smell is or what on earth are we experiencing here, you know, it's one of the few things in life that is equal parts science and art, wine. You know, the great wines in the world are as artistic as the greatest play, the best piece of music, the most beautiful painting in the world, and they express themselves in that way as well. And they have a bit of alcohol in them, so they help you relax as well. So
the language of wine is indeed the dissertation that we're immersed in at the moment here on RPP. It's 20 past 12. Kate McIntyre, MW from Muriduck Estate, is my guest, and we've been talking a lot about Gary Crittenden as the other pioneering family, one of the pioneering families very much on the Mornington Peninsula and great supporter of us here at RPP FM. the very wonderful things of Stone and Wood, and the track from them called Share the Wine. And I guess that's what we're doing here on RPP on this Friday lunchtime, sharing the language of wine with our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood, Kate McIntyre, MW from Muradak Estate. So we're talking the language of wine, the taste of wine, and the exhaustive study involved in becoming a master of wine. And Kate, you have the sort of the very elusive and much sought after, highly kudos making MW after your wife, or after your name. Why do you do it? I mean, what was it? What drove you? But what does that actually mean to have a? I mean, we understand, I guess, what a master's might mean in an education sense. I guess it's the wine industry, the international wine industry's version in many ways.
Yeah, the Institute of Masters of Wine is a UK-based body. It was invented by the Guild of Master Vintners in the UK about nearly 70 years ago now. The exam's been going for nearly 70 years, and it's become over time. It's become an international qualification. It started off being a qualification for English wine merchants. And a lot of people say to me, why on earth did the English come up with this? Why wasn't it France? You know, France is so famous for their amazing wines. And in fact, when you go to France and when you go to the different wine regions, they know a lot about their local region, but they don't know much about wine from anywhere else in the world. And the French are still pretty amazed to hear that anything more than sort of cheap and cheerful sunshine in a bottle wine is being made in Australia. So that's always fun to show them something quality from Australia. But the French are incredibly parochial, as are all countries that have a winemaking industry of their own. The English don't. Well, they do now, but let's just say they don't, because there's a little bit of a sparkling wine industry there, and there's a little bit of table wine being made there, but it's very new, and it's not established, and it's not international really. But the English are famous for having sourced the best wine from everywhere in the world. Mm. And they, when you go to England, you talk to English wine buyers, they don't say, I want to drink a Mornington Peninsula Pinot, what have you got? Or I want a Pinot for £15, and I'm happy to choose it from anywhere in the world. What's the best one that you can have? So they're used to having access to wines from France and Italy and Spain and Australia and America and Chile and South Africa and everywhere that makes wine. All of those wines, if you don't understand what's made where and how it's made and how the climate and the soil and the culture of each country influences those wines, can be very confusing for somebody buying wine, and can be very confusing for someone who is in a situation where they're sourcing wine to sell to consumers. So the Institute of Masters of Wine set up this Master of Wine exam as the highest qualification of someone who wants to say, I know as much as there is to know about the international world of wine, not just what it tastes like, but all of the issues that go into growing grapes and making wine. So the viticulture and the winemaking side of things, the marketing side of things, the laws that are international and that are relevant to each different market, and also wider, broader wine issues. There's sort of a more paper four is a more has a more journalistic sort of a side to it, where they're asking you to consider all of the issues, good and bad, that we have to deal with when selling and consuming wine in this world. You know, is wine good, bad, indifferent? You know, how do we deal with the alcohol side of things, which can be very dangerous and difficult? How do we deal with the beautiful artistic side of things without, you know, we don't want to vilify wine, because is wine different from other types of alcohol, and how? And then above and beyond that, all the philosophical kind of lovely thoughts about what is wine in its purest sense, and what does wine mean to humanity? So all of those things you have to sort of be able to talk about and communicate to the examiners. And of course, there's the exam side of things. So the exam, which is what the Master of Wine course, there's no coursework. You're just working up to passing the exam. So it's sort of very much self-led study, self-organized study. You get given a list of what's covered by the exam and some past papers. That's certainly the case when I started. It's more organized now. There's a website and you can kind of, there's lots of resources for students, and it's getting better and better as an educational program. But when I sat the exam, old papers, list of stuff that you need to know, off you go and learn it, and then come back and sit the exam, see how you go. The exam is 4 days. It's tasting in the morning, it's written papers, theory in the afternoon, and the tasting runs over 3 days, 12 wines, 2.25 hours. Day one is white wine, day two is red wine, day three is anything they feel like throwing at you, but often sparkling wine, fortified wine, sweet wine. And obviously you don't get to see the label because that would make it too easy. So you pour those wines out and you have 2.25 hours to taste the wines, write your notes, and then answer a lot of questions about the wines. And the questions will be something like, wines 1 and 4 are all made from the same grape variety and come from 4 different regions of origin. Part A of the question will be maybe a page long discussion of all 4 wines to identify the grape variety. And then part 2 and part 3 of the question will be, for each wine, please identify as closely as possible origin and things that have happened in the winemaking process. And they'll usually ask you to maybe concentrate on oak use or sugar or whatever's relevant to that bracket of wines. Mm. It's a bit of a pin the tail on the donkey kind of tasting. The more classic the wine, the more they want you to hone in on quality and where it comes from. So if you get a bracket of 4 wines from Bordeaux, for example, or 4 wines from Burgundy, or 4 vintage ports, or as I got in the exam when I passed, 8 Pinot Noirs from different parts of the world in paper 3, which threw a lot of people because they were all expecting their sparkling wine and fortified wines and sweet wines. You have to be able to recognize the wines from what you see in the glass and then write it down.
You had several goes at it. You only get you get 3 attempts at the written.
They change it every now and again.
But it seemed like an enormous amount of pressure.
When I sat it, you had five chances to sit the exam in a 6-year period. Yeah. So you could take a year off, which I did, but you have to pass either the tasting or the written in the first 3 goes. If right. you don't get a half pass, one or the other, they say, look, you're obviously not there yet. Go away and have a bit of a think about it. Come back in 2 years' time and start the program again from the beginning.
And how do you actually – does it require an enormous consumption? It's because it's not that. It's actually about being able to take a sip of a glass of wine and be able to identify the grape, the location, the year-ish, so how much age is on the wine. How do you learn that?
Everyone has their own. This is the difficult thing about the MW. Everyone has their own path. It sounds a little bit like Jediism or something.
It sounds like it.
You know, the Master of Wine is taught by people who have already passed the exam. So it's not a university course. It's run by Masters of Wine for students who want to become Masters of Wine, which is really interesting because everyone gets there a slightly different way, and you have a whole lot of very intelligent, driven people, some people who were lawyers or doctors who had those incredible studying skills that you have to have to pass medical and law exams. Other people are winemakers who have incredible knowledge of viticulture and winemaking but don't necessarily have the essay writing or studying skills that some other people have. Mm. So everyone has to learn something slightly different and comes at it from a slightly different angle. But in the end, it's all about showing that you have mastered all of the topics that are involved with wine.
Mm. So what motivated you to actually get the MW? Like, in a nutshell, I guess.
Well, yeah. When I started working in this wine shop, when I realised quite early that it wasn't just going to be a short-term job, that I really loved this, I was quite young and a woman in a male-dominated industry, and I didn't want to just be mediocre. I wanted to do something really awesome in the wine industry. And I was sort of looking at different options. I knew I didn't want to be a winemaker because I'd sort of seen Dad doing that. And that wasn't really, you know, you spend a lot of time on your own in a shed with grapes and juice and barrels and stuff. And I like getting out and talking. And I like interacting with people. So I thought, I don't want to do that. I didn't really want to do a winemaking or a wine marketing course in Australia, which were what were the options through the official university degrees, Roseworthy being the most famous, because I wanted to learn about the world of wine. I wanted to, you know, my French and Italian studies at school and my little bit of time that I'd spent in those countries, I thought, I want to know about French wine. I want to know about Italian wine and Spanish wine. I don't know anything about that. Oh, they make wine in Greece as well. I've never tasted any of that. I want to know all about all of that. And I want to be someone who can talk about all those wines with
great authority.
Gravitas and authority. Yes, exactly.
Course. Yeah.
As a lot of things that have happened in my life and my career, I happened upon a friend of mine who happened to be studying for the MW, and he said, "Hey, you're quite a good taster, and you know you're good with words. You should do the MW. That would be a good thing for you." So I went along to an introductory presentation and was just astounded by what these people knew and the authority with which they spoke. And I also thought, wow, this is a really interesting, unusual group of people. And they are a really, you know, the Institute of Master of Wine attracts a very strange and interesting group of people who are all from all walks of life and have all kinds of, and they all just want to be, they want to know as much as they can about stuff, and they're interested. You know, some are really serious academics. Some of them just work with big wine companies. Or in the UK, a lot of people who get their Master of Wine become wine buyers for the big supermarket chains, and they get really excited about tasting 80 different Merlots from Bulgaria under £10. I couldn't think of anything worse personally. But it that sort of finding the quality in amongst the lesser quality is something that people really like to find. So
Kate McIntyre is with us. Kate McIntyre, MW, Master of Wine from Murarak Estate. Your dissertation, your main dissertation, which was part of you attaining the MW, was in defence of your beloved Chardonnay. And as someone who was mightily turned off Chardonnay in probably a period of time where there was a glut of Chardonnay in the Australian wine market, I'm probably one of the people that should get to the 81st page of your 81-page dissertation. But, of course, from the peninsula, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir are probably the two big wines that the region is most famous for.
Yeah.
Why did you want to defend the Chardonnay, the much maligned Chardonnay that I know you love so much?
Well, I do love Chardonnay, and I do think that it had a really hard time for a while there. But the dissertation is, after you pass the exam, the dissertation is something that is the thing that the student can use to define themselves as Kate McIntyre MW rather than any other MW out there. And so being from the peninsula and loving Chardonnay as a grape variety, and I'd have to say I do love Pinot Noir as well, but Chardonnay would probably be, you know, my desert island wine. But it has to be a good Chardonnay. And in Australia, we planted Chardonnay and grew Chardonnay everywhere. And in the 80s, Max Allen, in his first wine book, said his entry for Chardonnay was, Chardonnay does well almost everywhere and makes a soft, easy drinking, not inoffensive wine. It's very forgiving of where you plant it. And we took that in Australia as red, and we grew so much Chardonnay, and we made so much Chardonnay. It had this wonderful time in the sun in the 80s, and it defined Australia in the world as producing this sunshine in a bottle wine. And then people got sick of it because it was too buttery and it was too rich and it was too oaky.
And it was
the opposite of what people want. And people went to New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc as the extreme opposite, you know, high acid, very fruity, no oak, very different flavours. Chardonnay doesn't have to be like that. Chardonnay, if it's respected, if it's grown in the right places, and the Mornington Peninsula is one of the best places in the world to grow Chardonnay, if it's treated with the sort of respect that other grape varieties like Pinot Noir get treated, it produces crisp, fine, elegant, complex wine. You don't have to give it 100% new oak. You don't have to put it through a full malolactic fermentation, which gives it that really buttery toffee character if it's got too much ripeness and too much malic acid. You can, if you understand Chardonnay and respect it, then it can make beautiful, crisp, fresh, lovely wine. And I wanted to do some research into why people thought they disliked Chardonnay and prove that it wasn't Chardonnay that was fault. It was the type of Chardonnay that people have been drinking. And that was really what I concluded, that most people, I had two people of the anti-Chardonnay people who I surveyed who tasted, you know, six different Chardonnays blind, didn't know they were Chardonnay, hated them all. Everybody else who said they had a Chardonnay liked Chardonnay when it was slightly different from that thing that they'd drunk in the 80s and 90s at all those wine bars and made themselves sick on.
Job done. It's 18 minutes to one. RPPFM is where you tune to. The wordy rapping hood is the show. Tracy Hutchison here with you. Kate McIntyre, MW from Murriduck Estate, is our guest. We're going to take a little bit of a detour and dive into your wonderful Francophile life as well, and then come back and talk more about just the explosion of the food and wine industry, I guess, that has really put the Mornington Peninsula on the map, and the wines in so many ways have been at the backbone of that. François Hardy on RPP, comment dit-il adieu? Another selection of our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood, Kate McIntyre, MW, as she just transports herself to some wonderful years and times in France, enjoying the wine and the culture of that place. The translation of that is...
How shall I say goodbye? How shall I say goodbye to you?
Not in time, not yet, not quite yet. We've still got a little bit of time to take us up to the 1 o'clock news here on RPPFM. Great to have your company on this Friday, and great to be talking the language of wine and the tasting of wine with Kate McIntyre, Master of Wine, based here on the beautiful Mornington Peninsula at the Murriduck Estate. The wine industry over the last few decades here, so I think the first vintage for Murriduck Estate was 86, so you've just had your 30th vintage, which is a huge thing to celebrate and one to be rightfully proud of. The wine, the vineyards of the peninsula have been very much the thing that has put the region on the map, not only nationally but internationally as a real food and wine destination, and I guess you've seen that. You've kind of been very much at the heart of that. Just from your point of view, what would you describe, or how would you describe that evolution of the peninsula as an absolute sort of food and wine mecca now?
How much time have I got?
About 8 minutes.
For me personally, it's been a real journey. Coming back home to the Mornington Peninsula took me quite a long time, because for a long time, you know, it was where my Dad had a hobby farm that took up too much of his time, and where we spent our childhood. And it wasn't until I'd done my study when I was young, I always imagined that I'd end up living in France or in London and being sort of, you know, surrounded by Europe. And that's one of the reasons I chose that song, because the more I studied, the more I realised I had to say goodbye to that idea, because I realised more and more how special the Mornington Peninsula is for our wine and our produce. It's such a beautiful part of the world. And my mother had a restaurant at Murriduck for 10 years and from 2000 to 2010. And over that time, as well as being able to showcase our wines and other Mornington Peninsula wines at the restaurant, she developed these incredible relationships with local producers, local food producers, and she still shops by going around to local orchards and local vegetable growers, and she gets meat from friends. We can't serve it at the restaurant because, you know, you have to buy meat from an official butcher, but you can slaughter animals for your own consumption, and we have a really good barter system going on down here on the peninsula for that sort of thing. Cheeses are amazing. Back in 2000, when we opened the restaurant, people were really confused by what Mum was trying to do, because there wasn't a fine dining ethos down here. You know, people would do their fine dining in Melbourne. They come down to the peninsula and have fish and chips on the beach and go to the Portsea pub and, you know, do all that lovely casual stuff. But Mum tried to do a degustation menu there, and it took her 10 years of having to resort back to an a la carte and doing different types of foods. And before she now could evolve to being a degustation restaurant that does a degustation menu once a month. And now we've got the most incredible burgeoning of food. You know, we have wonderful restaurants. We have some of the best restaurants in Victoria and in Australia down here. You know, 10 Minutes by Tractor, Pringer Estate are both winery restaurants that are producing, I think they're world-class food. It's really, really exciting. And the wine industry's really supported that. People who appreciate high-quality, good wine are prepared to spend good money on wine. You know, the wine is expensive down here. It's expensive to grow grapes. It's expensive to make wine. So the wine has to be expensive. So it has to be good. They also want good coffee and they want good food and they don't want it all to be, you know, fancy food, but they want it to be really good quality. Mm. And, you know, I think probably 10, 15, 20 years ago, a few people had some secret quality producers, but now it's so easy to find all of this stuff here, and tourism has grown that. But I think that on the back of the wine region here, the wine region has been so instrumental in bringing people who appreciate all those good things down here, and where there's good wine and good food and good coffee, there's people who love it.
It has been a phenomenal thing to I guess see the evolution of that, of those of us who've watched the peninsula evolve from you know, for myself growing up here in the 60s and early 70s, it was a very, very different sort of place. Yeah. You know, still dirt tracks and those sorts of things. The idea that it would become one of the world's sort of signature go-to food and wine destinations. But as you say, very much, Kate, off the back of the vineyards, of the people, you know, like your father, like Gary Crittenden, who came here 30 years ago, 35-odd years ago, who sort of recognised that the climate was right, the soil was right, and there was land in an incredible sort of location to be able to build that. Yeah. Is there a sense, you know, celebrating, and we're sort of coming up to the end of the time together, but is there a sense that, you know, that you know you have been part of building something really quite special, certainly as a family business, because you see a number of family businesses that are built on the back of vineyards and wineries in this part of the world. And the same way, I guess, we've seen in South Australia, but it's sort of taken that model and become a more, you know, I guess, contemporary version of it.
Absolutely. I mean, we're a really young wine industry here in the Mornington Peninsula. The first commercial vines were planted in the 70s at LG Park and at Mainridge Estate. And since then, so 40 plus years, my lifetime really, is how long this region has been producing wine. And to be producing such high quality wine so quickly is amazing. And we're now seeing second generation coming through. And again, we talk about the Crittendens and Rollo Crittendens now making wine for the family business. I'm second generation with Muriduk. There's other, you know, we've got other second generation coming through and being passionate about wine in the way that our parents were. And it's a really exciting time because we're starting to see the fruits of our parents' labours. The vines are maturing. Our understanding of what we can make here now is getting better and better. And I just think it's going to keep going from strength to strength. It's really exciting.
It is an exciting time to be on the peninsula and thrilled to be here as well. Kate McIntyre, thank you so much for coming in. It's been great. We can find you at the Muriduk Estate. Cellar door every day.
We're open every day from 11 till 5, except for Christmas Day and, you know, a couple of public holidays. But, yeah, usually you can find us. We also, you know, lots of good cellar doors around here, lots of exciting events. You know, the Mornington Peninsula Vineyards Association has put together a few good tastings where you can find us. Yeah, Queen's Birthday Weekend's the next one coming up, Winter Wine Weekend at Red Hill. Worth checking that out.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for being part of the Wordy Wrapping Hood on this Friday, the 22nd of April. Many of us woke this morning to the very sad news to learn that the pop icon Prince had passed away unbelievably prematurely at 57. Fortunate to have seen him last month. And let's take to the news this beautiful piece from Prince Nelson Rogers. Rest in peace. The incredible Prince. Prince Nelson Rogers, who's passed away this morning. Very, very sad indeed, but left an incredible legacy. Coming up to 1 o'clock here on RPPFM. Thanks for your company today. I'll look forward to it again next week on the Wordy Rapping Hood.